Hello, welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about our favorite defunct continuities. Of course, to my co-host, JT from Saskatoon.
Good evening.
Also, this is Red Ink.
What's up?
All right. So, when I hear defunct continuities that are no longer in continuity, my first thought goes to the original post-crisis DC continuity. And it's a weird thing because I reread a lot of those books. They aren't stellar writing. They aren't great writing, but they're consistent writing. They had good editors back then. And they like colored my perception of these characters that I love so much. And I'm not sure if it's purely nostalgia, but it was competent. It wasn't great. It was competent. Go ahead, Red.
I spent the last couple of weeks reading Superboy. The old fucking Superboy, the 90s Superboy.
The Carl Kessel, Tom Grummett.
And there's times I want to cringe so hard that my butthole turns into a fucking black hole. It's entertaining, but when you have somebody say, oh, it's so funky fresh and stuff like that, it's like, oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, no matter how hard DC wants to try and fix the continuity, like from Rebirth forward, how he's like, oh yeah, oh, that's the continuity that we're dealing with now. But yeah, that's that post-crisis up to 2011 DC, that I love that stuff. Like, and the good and the bad, like, because you guys both know I love the Bloodlines crossover, like all those annual, like literally the annuals that Marvel and DC used to publish back in the 80s and 90s, like that. I used to love those themed annuals. I even loved like that really dumb era of Superman, like post return, where, you know, they had this whole storyline where Lex Luthor is building up this thing called Hyper Sector, and it's like the Delta City kind of, he was going to Delta City Metropolis. He's got this thing called Hyper Sector, and they're talking about how print is dead and the Daily Planet was owned by LexCorp for months, and this is right around the time that Superman went from, you know, Truth, Justice and the American Way to Electric Blueberry, because it's that time where he got overcharged after the final night and he turned into Electro Superman, which really dumb. Wait, but there's something fun about that.
There's literally no origin to Electric Superman. It's just one day. Hey, guys, I'm Electric Superman. Hey, what's going on? The only origin they ever give, which is the one JT fucking said, was announced in Wizard fucking magazine. It was never in the comics. Never explained in the comics. Somebody was interviewed in Wizard magazine, and they explained what happened. That's the only fucking source.
I'm pretty sure it was like a one speech balloon from Professor Hamilton, who surmised that his body was overcharged out when they reignited the sun. But I mean, Red's right about that too. That's where they like explicitly said, no, this is why. It's just, but it's that sun. This is all the time where Luther became president and hired the best assassin money can buy to frame Bruce Wayne for a crime, but he just happened to pick David Kane, who is this assassin who also knows that Bruce Wayne is Batman, who crafted, like, his frame up was so good. It's literally the only reason Bruce Wayne would have killed this woman was because she found out he was Batman. Only people who knew the truth would think that was the motive, you know, stuff like that. Or
Let's back up a little, because yeah. I heard another theory about the Electric Superman thing. And, you know, we're already in the fucking weeds, so let's just fucking dive in deep. And are you familiar with Strange Visitor, guys?
Strange Visitor is actually Livewire in fucking Superman's costume.
No. Strange Visitor is Kismet.
Oh, is Kismet. Yeah, was it? Yeah, the human incarnation of this cosmic force who also happened to be this girl who was a friend of Clark Kent's back in Smallville,
so,
or something.
So Kismet joined with Sharon Vance, Superman's childhood friend, to become Strange Visitor. And as I said, There's another powerful being like Kismet that was around earlier in the books, and some people had a theory that Superman, when he was Electric Superman, was the same deal going on. Is one theory I heard. I'm not sure how true this theory is. I'm kind of doubting it more and more I think of it, but I'm just saying that was thrown out there.
Yeah.
Talking about the Monarch?
I don't think it was the Monarch. Because Monarch's only a level 4.
Oh, God. Is that the dude who kind of looked like a sci-fi version of Quan Chi from Mortal Kombat? He had, like, the floaty hands, and he was trying to take over the universe?
No, it was a dude in a big, muscly metal fucking suit.
Who was originally supposed to be...
He had a dumb crown on his... He only exists because, as Ben said... He's supposed to be Captain Net because they're doing this whole fucking mystery crossover fucking thing, and people figured out, like, the second fucking comic, it's Captain Atom. And then, of course, the editors of DC have to go, no, it's not. And here, it's this secret villain we just pulled out of our asses.
It's Hawk.
But Hawk and Dove.
But you told us this is a villain that's existed before, somebody we know. No, it's the Monarch. It's always been the Monarch.
Yeah. I mean, Marvel wasn't that much better, and it's not... Marvel doesn't really have a lot of defunct continuities, like in and out, like 616 Marvel. It's that whole sliding time scale, like everything counts. But they had stuff like in the late 80s, The New Universe, which is their first experiment at creating superheroes in the real world, finger quotes. And I read a lot of those comics, and they had some really cool ideas. Like, there is this character, Justice, who, you know, he could generate an energy shield with one hand and shoot, like, blasts out of the other, and he was possibly this alien visitor from another dimension, or he might just be a human, like an American soldier with just incredibly fucked up memories. Or he had DP7, which in this world they're called paranormal, so is all about this like conspiracy to wrangle all these people who got superpowers because of the White Event, which is this thing that happened in like Philadelphia, and they all get like weird
superpowers.
Yeah, oh God, I honestly never thought about that before. And Marvel's done stuff like that, like in the early aughts they had this whole push where, because when Warren Ellis was really hot and, you know, the stories of him hadn't quite come out yet, like he tried rebooting it as like a separate reality. And then when they did, was it the New Ultimates post the second Secret Wars, where now they've got the Triskelion in New York Harbor and it's owned by T'Challa, and he's created like his own heroic search and rescue organization where they introduce some characters from the new universe characters in Marvel continuity, and they also turn Galactus from the Devourer of Worlds to the Lifebringer.
The Lifebringer.
Yeah, they literally fucks with his jacket. What's that?
Don't give him his jacket.
Yeah. It's stuff like that. Did you guys ever read like Archie comics back in the day?
Dude, Archie is such a rabbit hole about continuity. It's Jesus Christ.
Specifically the stuff in like kind of the early, like the mid-90s into the aughts, like where Veronica and Jughead, you know, got their own titles. They kind of tightened up the reign. There wasn't continuity per se, but it's just 90s AF, and they were having fun with it. And you can largely consider that a defunct continuity now, because when Archie comics do come out now, it's either the horror stuff or... watch Riverdale, because that's all that counts anymore. Like, and I know you're not a big fan of him, Mark, and of Mark Waid, Ben, but Mark Waid, when they rebooted Archie a few years ago before Riverdale, it was okay. It wasn't, you know, the classic Archie comics, but there was enough of it there that, you know, I enjoyed what I was reading. But yeah, then Riverdale cock-blocked that. Now all the comics come out because we got to have our monthly advertising for the show. That's
how Archie's always worked. Hey, whenever there's a TV series or something about Archie, they always fucking push it badly. Like, do you remember the new Archie cartoon?
Yes. Who are you talking to, Red?
Archie Mysteries?
Yeah. But,
like, the new Archies in the fucking 90s. And then there's Archie's Mysteries. When those shows were out, the comics changed continuity to fucking also mix with those as well. Like, that's just what Archie does.
It's like I said, the Jughead comic in the 90s, like, they never really referenced that, but there's this thing where he had a whole other crew of friends other than, like, Archie and everyone else. They really leaned into him being a drummer. I mean, spun Jughead off when he had Time Police and Jughead's Diner. Even Hot Dog got a short-lived comic. So, I mean, those continuities are no longer there because we don't have that.
I remember Time Police.
Jughead was Mackie and Archie's future descendant. I remember looking at... Sorry.
I said, I think so. I can't remember everything about it.
I don't remember the character's name, but I remember it basically was a female Archie. Like, she had the same color hair. She had that cross hatch in the side, freckles. It just... Are we sure that isn't Archie in drag? I mean, and like you said, defunct continuity's been something, like, because I mentioned this off air, folks, is I loved reading Marvel's G.I. Joe comic growing up. I had almost that whole run when I was a kid. And, you know, then I got rid of a lot of my comics. And when I got on my own and the 80s nostalgia boom hit, and, you know, like 03, 04, Image Comics had got the license to do G.I. Joe because, you know, 80s was hot. And they created, you know, G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, Volume 2, although that has now been declared defunct by Hasbro. And it's either listed as Volume 2 or G.I. Joe Reinstated. And they started from issue 1. They started writing as it's been 7 years from the first issue of Marvel Comics. And, you know, Cobra's on the rise again. So they have to reform the G.I. Joe team. It just kind of gets bigger and bigger. And it goes through two ongoing series before Devil's Due, which was the studio under Image that was working on this. Image lost the license, and then they went back to, fell into Hasbro, and then IDW. And they kind of, they not fixed things, but you continued the story. I thought a lot of it worked very well. And one of the best things to come out of it was the Declassified miniseries. Like, you get Dreadnoughts Declassified, where you find, like, this is the origin of Zartan. You had G.I. Joe Declassified, which was from the inception of the original 12-person G.I. Joe team in Marvel. And then you had a Snake Eyes Declassified, which was, like, it's still by a lot of fans considered to be the definitive origin. And it does work with the Marvel Comics continuity. And even Larry Hama has given it, you know, his personal thumbs up. He really liked what they did there. But like I said, this line got disavowed by Hasbro after Image lost the license, or Devil's Due, because Devil's Due eventually became its own studio. And then IDW got the license, still currently holds the license, and they started A Real American Hero Volume 2, which is the official in canon continuity continuation from the Marvel Comics, because Hasbro said so. But I really have a lot of love for that Devil's Due G.I. Joe, and it introduced me to writers like Brandon Jirwa, who I'm a big fan of his stuff, writer-artist Tim Seeley, who a lot of fans will know from, like, the Hack Slash comics. He's he's making inroads into Marvel and DC right now and working here and there. One of the first times I ever saw Jake Scott Campbell art outside of Danger Girl, because he used to do alternate covers for the G.I. Joe titles. So, and what about you guys? What are some other defuncts you like?
Not sure about like, but we can't go without mentioning the Star Wars Extended Universe, or now known as Legends. Because that's a case of, I really feel like they did throw the baby out with the bathwater there.
I always have questioned that decision, like they're saying, none of this stuff matters anymore. And it smacks of corporate meddling behind the scenes. Well, we don't completely own like lock, stock, and barrel on any of this stuff, so it, because you even see now with a lot of writers finally getting some sort of a recompense from Disney for stuff that they wrote and created while they were working, you know, on, because was it Dark Horse had the license for the longest time, right?
Well, Dark Horse held the license for Star Wars for a long while. The only other publisher that had the rights longer was, oddly enough, Marvel. But the reason why I want to bring up the Extended Universe, because there's a lot of garbage in it. That's without argument or without dispute. There's a lot of garbage in it simply because you had all these writers that were basically said, okay, go nuts. And you had writers that took a mindset of throw a dart at the screen whenever a Star Wars movie is playing, and whatever character you hit, you can write a book about. And they did. Literally, there is a book about nearly every character that shows up, even for a second. The Cantina Band, there's a book about them. The guy with the prune face, there's a book about him. The You'll Be Dead guy, you know, he's in a book. It's like, there's just so much literature, and out of which only 10% at best is good. But all that's gone. Just thrown out like a baby with the bathwater. Just gone. And
Jackson
won me several bets and won you several bets. So you should be very thankful to Jackson.
I am.
Fuck Jackson.
Probably going to buy his Black Series action figure when I get paid next.
But my overall point in this is, like, the one thing that really disappointed a lot of fans was just the complete jettisoning of Mara Jade.
Brie Larson wants a player.
Okay, jettison fucking Mara Jade.
Yeah, but I mean,
release the ballasts.
Back. Yeah. But that's the whole thing, is it wasn't necessarily a creative decision. It was just a corporate decision, because, yeah, there's a lot of crap, but you threw out some really good stuff, too. Like, say what you will about the video game, but I really like the book Shadows of the Empire, and I thought that was a pretty interesting bridge and introduced, you know, the aspect of, you know, the organized crime and the Star Wars universe, which you really, you know, you got a little more into that through that book. And granted, I read them when I was, you know, young and in high school, but I loved the Young Jedi Knights series that had, you know, Luke establishing a new Jedi Academy, and, you know, you got Jace and Jaina, and was it Lo Baca, which was like Chewie's nephew. And then there was also this one girl who was like, she had two arms when the series started. And I think in the second book, she lost her arm and it became a whole thing throughout the rest of the series. Like, there's really cool stuff like that. And now Disney is like, nah, well, that doesn't matter anymore. Even though it should.
I mean, we're seeing some of the ideas re-implemented. Not all of them, but we're seeing some of them.
Yeah.
Especially in stuff like The Mandalorian. But this does not But what we are seeing is definitely a preference put in any continuity created after the Disney buyout. And for instance, in Mandalorian, they made references to Operation Cinder, which was in the post-Disney merger Battlefronts game. And Ahsoka showing up, which, by the way, Rosario Dawson did a fantastic job acting her. I'm not saying this as a complaint. I'm saying this as an observation. The fact that Ahsoka showing up in Mandalorian Season 2, again, preference to post-buyout versus pre-buyout stuff. But I do like the pre-buyout stuff that they did sneak into Mando Season 2, which I think was, you know, Jon Favreau is a fanboy just like us, so he does what he can.
And there's one defunct continuity that I've always wanted to get into, although I have not been able to find more than, like, you know, five or six comics total, at least as far as I've looked, is the original Marvel Comics Transformers comic, but the title as it was published in the UK, where, you know, one of the legends of Transformers comic writing, Simon Furman, first got into it. And I've always wanted to check that series out, but I just, like I said, aside from a handful of comics, I have not been able to find a lot of material in that way. And it's always been something of a fascination for me that I would love to check out. Yeah. Like, you do, like, there was a storyline, it was the Target 2006, and it brought in Scourge and Cyclonus and Galvatron from, like, they've come back in time to...
Did I just have a stroke? Like, weren't we just talking about Star Wars? Where the fuck did Transformers come from?
I don't know. I was kind of confused there, too, because I was like, we're talking about Star Wars, baby bathwater, and then all of a sudden, Cyclonus, and, like...
Sorry, I thought we were done with Star Wars.
And the sweeps.
Yeah, it's stuff like that. You get characters like Death's Head, who I knew from some of the Marvel UK comics I read in the 90s, was introduced there. I'm just saying. But, you know, hard left turn back to that universe far, far away. What else about Star Wars, Ben?
Oh, Red.
Well, I think we're done with Star Wars. It's just... It was a hard left turn to fucking Transformers. It was like, what the fuck?
Like, God bless the fucking writers of the Star Wars Expanded Universe, because fuck it, they really did try to, like, stay in continuity with each other's shit. There was no major Ryan Johnson around. There was a little bit of that where one writer's like, no, I didn't like what this writer did, so I'm gonna change things. But like, for the most part, the books tried, really fucking tried, and more than they had the right to. Like, if you talk about a fucking extended universe that had writers like not give any fucks, read the Star Trek books.
Do we have to?
Exactly.
Sadly, the most Star Trek comics I've ever read was... There was, I think, Marvel and then DC had an ongoing start. Like, one of them was... I think it was Marvel, because Marvel did, like, an adaptation of Star Trek The Motionless Picture, and they published that for a few years, and then I think DC got it, if they didn't have it in the first place. And, you know, it's all about the white collar red suited Kirk and everybody. Like, and I think they even had a few adaptations of the movies. And Marvel, I remember they had Paramount, it was a big article in Wizard, Paramount Comics in the 90s, where they had, like, a DS9 comic and Voyager and Starfleet Academy, where Quark's nephew was there trying not to be a complete lech. It was also the same time they had that X-Men Next Gen crossover. But any Star Trek comics after that, I haven't kept up with.
Well, not just the comics, the books as well, because the funniest thing is Takei wrote, like, I think only one book called The Captain's Daughter, which is the story of Captain Sulu's daughter, and he really loved writing this fucking book. Like, he's really fucking proud of this book. I've never read it, but he came up with this backstory about how Sulu met her mother and all this stuff, and Sulu had a family, and Sulu was a loving father. Takei really fucking loved this book. And then when the Star Trek producer says, oh, Sulu's gay. Sulu's always been gay. Sulu had a husband. Takei, like, fucking blew his gasket. Because they fucked the only book he wrote.
I don't think it was just that. He felt insulted because he was a gay man playing a straight character. So they took that away from him.
Yes, that too. But I think I think there is a portion of what I'm saying about the fact that they just, like, fucked his book. But very interesting, because speaking of other people who wrote Star Trek books that weren't Star Trek, you know, Shatner had lots of fucking Star Trek books.
Didn't he have, like, a whole trilogy where he brought Kirk back after Generations?
Yeah, The Return. The Return trilogy. Oh my god, it's amazing. And there's go ahead, Brad.
No, I was just laughing because you did your dramatic pause, and JT finally did not say anything.
I was trying to remember where I was going with the Return trilogy. I wasn't doing a dramatic pause. But the Return, where Romulans and the Borg brought Kirk back to life, and Spock was able to, like, bitch slap the Borg Collective, because it turns out when Spock mind-melded with V'ger, like, he got little V'ger in him, and V'ger is apparently, like, the father of all Borg or some shit. I don't know. It's fucking Shatner, man. Fucking 90s Shatner.
Like, there's different continuities. Like, lots of people say, oh, V'ger created the Borg, and some people say, no, the Borg found V'ger, and they're the ones who upgraded him, stuff like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I want to know about the giant fucking dildo with a fucking beach ball coming out of it. Where the fuck did it go? Why was it even here?
The cosmic Tootsie Roll?
Yes.
There's a series of books about that. Never read them, but there's a series of books about that.
I honestly don't know if you're fucking with me right now.
I'm not. I'm really not. I mean, look, there's a story of the fucking Mirror universe where the probe was wrecking the Terran Empire, and Goatee Spock was able to bring, like, George and Gracie the whales back to present time, and the fucking probe talked to George and Gracie. George and Gracie are like, yeah, humans are fucking assholes. And the probe transformed with the giant armored warriors and started fucking up the planet.
They made mecha whales?
Yes!
Oh my god. I'm not gonna lie, I'd read that. Wow.
So it makes me wonder, what the fuck did Spock say to the whales in the movie that made the probe go, okay, I'll leave you guys alone, if the other response is, fuck some shit up!
Just, wow, man. See, I didn't know there was a trilogy of those, but I knew there was the one book where, you know, the Romulans and the Borg teamed up like that. And I knew there was another book because I remember seeing the cover at a bookstore. And it's like, of course they would do that. And of course Shatner wrote it because it's got, you know, Kirk, older Spock, Scotty from that one episode because he's in the Next Gen timeline now. And because for no reason other than spite, McCoy is still alive. Like, was it Admiral or Ambassador McCoy from, like, the very first, like, encounter at Farpoint McCoy? And I was like, I don't know if I should read this, because I sense that it will hurt me.
The only reason DeForest Kelly wasn't allowed on fucking Next Gen is they couldn't insure him. He was like 80 years old, and they're like, fuck, he's going to die at any second. We're not giving this guy life insurance or anything.
Well, just so he can walk down a hall with Brent Spiner and have a scene.
That wasn't even him. That was somebody in fucking makeup to look like him.
Really? I thought that was him.
No.
See, the continuity of Star Trek is all wibbly-wobbly now, thanks to AJ and his lens flares. Because, you know, Paramount's too scared about, you know, cashing in on what works. And it's like, no, we're going to ride this crazy train. Because it's, we own this, and we can control this, and we can make TV series on streaming services that may or may not be shitting all over the continuity, but no one cares anymore.
Well, like, take out whatever you want about fucking Star Trek. It's, some of the books are weird. Some of the books are kind of hilarious. Like there was a fucking throwaway line in Deep Space Nine during the Dominion War where they're like, did you hear the news? The Dominion took over Beta Zed. Because the writers, Ronald D. Moore, was like, we need to name a named planet that people would fucking care about. So they're like, oh, fuck, the Dominion's really gaining territory. So they picked Beta Zed. And so someone wrote a fucking book about this. And in this book, it turns out the reason Beta Zed fell was because Loxana Troi, who is like on the leading council of the planet, was like, well, if we upgrade our fucking defense network, we're going to become a target if we have an upgraded defense network, so let's just leave it old and aging. So it turns out the reason Beta Zed fell was because Loxana Troi was fucking stupid.
I wouldn't say stupid. She just had a plan that went wrong, that's all.
And they were able to take back Beta Zed because Troi discovers a ancient Beta Zed weapon where all the Beta Zeds focus their psychic energy into a focal point and use it to, like, mind fuck all the Dominion soldiers on the planet at once. Oh, and Mr. Holm dies.
Who the fuck is Mr. Holm?
The lurch-like guy that's carries her luggage.
Okay.
Wow. You know, honestly, I have never read much past into the, like, that continuity, like the books of Star Trek. I read the first couple of books in, like, after the show is over, and like, this is what life is like on DS9 now with Ezri Dax, you know, getting with Bashir, and you have that one Dominion warrior who's like, they basically treat him like Worf was when Worf joined Starfleet. Like, he's, you're an enemy, now you're an ally, and, you know, let's make this work together.
Some good ideas in the DS9 books. The execution is lacking.
You can't insult the sacred cow of DS9, Round Ben.
No, there's big problems with it, the books, but there are two things I liked. One thing I liked is they actually brought Ro Laren back, and they made her the chief of security of the station. I like that.
Did they fix the fucking planet of people that fucking Sisko massacred?
No, they didn't fix that, because they always established that Sisko was a bad guy with that. But the other thing that I liked about that was Bajor finally joined the Federation, and it also established that any Maquis that were prisoners because of the fact that the Cardassians turned out to really be the baddies, got full pardons. So those are the things I liked.
Did you ever read the Titan series where, you know, Riker finally gets his command?
No. People fucking love those books, but I'm not going to touch them.
Why is that?
Because they sound just bleh.
You're not wrong. I remember reading the first book a few years ago, and he had a... oh, God, what was that planet from DS9 that finally joined the Federation? I just blanked on it.
Bajor? Rigel?
Yeah. He has a Bajoran. If I remember correctly, the first novel involves some wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey time travel where this Bajoran that was on Riker's crew in the Titan is sent back in time to, like, prehistoric Bajor, and he starts their religion. If I'm remembering that correctly, I might have it wrong, but that I'm pretty sure that's what it was.
We worship this fat guy with a beard.
He had to wear a girdle since season 2.
But, yeah, Star Trek's weird. Like, some of the comics over the years that I've seen, like, just seeing previews, like, they've had, I think, 2 different series. One for year 4 of the original series, and there's currently ongoing a year Star Trek year 5.
Yeah, that's the one where they're showing the motion picture uniforms.
Well, they haven't gotten to the motion picture uniforms. Like, they still got the like command gold, blue, and engineering red, but it's like the lead up to, like, this is the end of the NCC 1701 Enterprise that we know from the original series before those years in between that and the motionless picture. Where they've got, was it the... I forget, they've got this new alien part of the crew they call Bright Eyes. Is like, I think it was a Corbinite, like it's a being made out of crystal. That they spend the better part of, like, the first probably 2/3 of what amount, what I forget how many issues they're at now, but they spend, like, a large part of the series thus far just trying to communicate with them after they take it on board the Enterprise in the first arc. And was it Gary Seven? I think that's the name of this guy. He's got, like, a shape-shifting black cat, and he's, yeah, like, works for, like, something. They've got a storyline going on there where pilot. He's trying, yeah, and they get into his origin and how he's working for these cosmic beings who are, like, trying to keep the universe on a stable path, and he keeps, basically at this point, he's become like a threat to the Enterprise. It's amazing what you can get by reading the previews. You look at, like, other sci-fi, like, you like Stargate, because we were talking about Star Wars and Star Trek. Like, you have the original novels, which I've never been able to track down. I would be very interested in trying at least the first one out, see what it's like. But you have, like, you know, the movie, and then you have the TV show, which, you know, ostensibly, like, is years after the film, and they go in their own way, and they've built up a fairly good thing. But I don't know if it was a reboot. Do you remember they had that Stargate Origins web series a few years ago?
I don't which remember was, this yes. at all.
Yeah.
Yes, and nobody watched it.
Yeah.
You remember the Stargate cartoon that nobody watched?
I own that cartoon, Ben.
Oh, my God.
Don't it me. Was $5 at a liquidation store.
How did I know you're going to say?
You could have used those $5 to, like, buy yourself a taco. Taco
every time taco. JT goes to the fucking Walmart, he just looks in the bargain bin and fucking, oh my God!
It's Filmation Ghostbusters!
I actually don't own that.
Yeah, Blanchard does, though.
I mean, if I could find it, I'd buy it, because I like that
shit.
But I like a show, and if I can find the DVDs, I'll buy it. What's wrong?
Ben doesn't like it because Chris Chan likes it.
I don't like it because it was the inferior Ghostbusters cartoon.
Well, I don't by any means think it's better than RGB. It just... I grew up, that was my first Ghostbusters cartoon before I got into real Ghostbusters. And,
I love how much of a fuck you that was. Speaking of continuities that are about to be completely ignored and changed. So we have Ghostbusters, this new movie coming out.
And, Afterlife.
Yeah, Ghostbusters Afterlife. How much of the previous Ghostbusters material do you think they're going to keep?
What do you mean? I think they're only going as the first two movies, and that's all.
Ah.
Like, apparently it's about, like, Ray's kid, or not Ray's, Egon's kid and fucking something like that.
The reason why I bring this up is there was a project that Harold Ramis, Dan Aykroyd, actually wrote that had all the original cast, at least letting their voices. The video game is considered by many of the fans as, quote, the third movie. And I love the game because it's silly, it's fun, it's weird. But I think it's kind of a shame to sort of like throw that out, even though it's not a big or important part of the continuity. Go ahead.
If you want to talk about extended novels and shit.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Apparently the Rookie has his own fucking set of novels.
Really?
Where he opens up a fucking Ghostbusters in like Chicago or something like that.
Look, what I love about the game is the fact that you're watching your favorite characters, the Ghostbusters, interacting with each other, and the characters are pretty spot on the way that they act. But also, you're this new guy they hired, and they treat you like shit.
Well, they literally tell you you're probably going to die.
That's what I love.
As soon as you start the game.
That's what, like,
no, like, don't give him a name.
Did you sign all the papers? Like...
Yeah, or Venkman's. Don't give him a name. Or don't get attached.
Like, I fucking love that. The fact that like, because that's the one thing that people forget about the Ghostbusters. They think they're all nice and cuddly and cute and heroes. But if you watch the first two movies, or the first movie more so than the second, they're like schlubby exterminators.
Yeah, I mean, the game is the third movie. It kind of completes the story that, you know, Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis were kind of going for, like, overall, like, the overarching story kind of things. I've seen a couple interviews where he talks about that.
It had the original four.
Yeah. I mean, and that's... Honestly, like, as excited as I am to see Ghostbusters Afterlife, I mean, and we got the game, like, really, it kind of begins and ends with Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2 for me.
And Ghostbusters the game.
And the game, but...
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Afterlife is going to be another disappointment.
I'm pretty sure Afterlife is going to be better than 2016.
I don't know about that.
I'm not going to say, I'm not going to say it's going to be good, I'm saying it's going to be better.
That fucking wonton joke was the bomb, all right? It was the funniest joke ever.
You know what made me laugh the most in watching that movie? When they killed Bill Murray. I actually, one of the theater attendants had to come down to my seat in the theater and tell me to be quiet. Because I just couldn't stop laughing.
You watched that in the theater? Jesus.
Yeah, we covered this like 5 years ago. I was like, I went to see it because I wanted to see it the one time, and it was okay.
And but, he didn't even mind them holding his eyes open with the restraints.
Yeah, but the eye drops were a nice touch. No, like, Ghostbusters, like, the movies and the game, I like that. And even the, like, the IDW, like, the menagerie of comics that IDW has put out, like, they had, like, a few one-shots, but once you get that first ongoing going forward, like, they really have a pretty good continuity in which this is, I think the comics are set somewhere in, like, the early 90s, like, after Ghostbusters 2, after the events of the game, you know, the rookie's gone off to Chicago, and they've built on stuff from there, and it's fairly good, although, you know, they can only do so many, be budgeted for so many issues before an ongoing becomes a miniseries, and that's kind of how they've published the comics going forward. Like, they've had crossovers with the Ninja Turtles, they've had the Ghostbusters Transformers crossover, which was a lot of fun. And I just mean fun, Ben. Just, it's not the best comic, but it was fun.
It was low effort.
I've stared into the abyss and stared back.
No, that's the crossover where they met the 2016 Ghostbusters. And then they had a crossover which literally was Crisis on Multiple Ghostbusters, where they crossed over with every conceivable media incarnation of the Ghostbusters. Like, they even had, like, the little sprite versions of the Ghostbusters from, like, the Sega Genesis game come from their own separate world, and they have to team up with the, you know, OG 616 1984 Ghostbusters, because they're containment units exploded, but the ghosts have been transported to, like, multiple parallel realities.
Yeah, so this is starting to sound like the fucking He-Man comic, Masters of the Multiverse.
What about the Extreme Ghostbusters?
They show up
twice, because in the continuity of, like, the comic, Kylie is a research assistant for Egon and Ray, and what's the Spanish dude game with, like, the...
Eduardo,
he shows up as... He just decides to apply for the job and becomes, like, Janine's assistant.
Yeah. And then
what's the guy with the Weechler?
He doesn't show up until, like, the Extreme Ghostbusters show up in that crossover.
How do you also get downstairs again? Aren't there a lot of ghosts in basements? How do you get in attics? Why are you even on this job?
Because he's handy capable, Red.
And they don't want to look like huge assholes when they tell him no.
Because the Ghostbusters are assholes.
Yeah, they are.
Like, it was actually fucking the movie Ghostbusters, they would be asking the same questions I am. Literally to his fucking face.
Yeah, pretty sure Venkman asked that question in the crossover, if I'm not certain. Now, the Ghostbusters continuity, like, you have the movie Ghostbusters and the comics, which are more or less the same thing, and then you have, like, the real Ghostbusters, which establishes their own continuity, like, in passing references to, you know, Gozer and Viggo, and the terror dogs actually show up in a couple episodes. I know, besides the movie, like, what do you guys, how do you guys feel about the real Ghostbusters? Like, that continuity, which I guess does or does not tie into Extreme, because some people have theories about that.
Well, the gorilla was awesome.
I don't know, do you prefer him with the propeller beanie or the Indiana Jones special?
Indiana Jones special. Especially the chick from the future. She was hot.
But anyways, other continuities that have long since been destroyed. What else is there?
You know, I want to say GoBots, but they really only had the one continuity.
GoBots was ruined the second that dress was put on.
I got a good idea. Let's make rocks.
Rock lords, powerful living rocks. Let's hire, yep. Let's hire Margot Kidder and make sure she's fucking coked out of her brain.
But they balanced her out with Roddy McDowell.
Cooked out of his brain.
I actually say Roddy McDowell reminds me of one of my favorite sci-fi series that I watched a lot growing up was the original Planet of the Apes. And then you have the modern trilogy. And nothing happened in between those. Nothing that involved Marky Mark. Nothing that involved Tim Roth. And nothing that involved Tim Burton. It didn't fucking happen.
Transformer!
They actually explained why what's his face was at the Lincoln Memorial in the novel.
Seriously?
It's actually explained in the movie if you pay attention.
I'm intrigued enough to ask, how does that work?
Whenever you go through the wormhole, whatever goes in first arrives last.
So someone went in after him. The villain.
Yeah, so when Marky Mark left, what's his face, the general, whatever the fuck his face,
found the was in jail. Pod.
Yeah, and then he never, I think he went in the original pod. But anyways, years later, he went through the fucking portal, then arrived years before Marky Mark.
Wow. You know, I did think of one thing that, you know, would bring up. It's the continent, like the defunct continuity of the Dreamwave Transformer comics. Now, you know, we've talked at length before about IDW's Transformers. But and as shitty as the business practices of Pat Lee was in regards to the writers and artists and all the rest of the staff at Dreamwave, they were actually established something I think was very interesting. Like, I mean, it's, they kind of play off like when the first miniseries comes out, it's the Transformers kind of loosely, this is like loose years after the original cartoon and ignoring the third season and Optimus dying in the movie where, you know, they went back to Cybertron and the shuttle blew up and no one's seen the Transformers for like 10 years. And, you know, this slowly they're reactivated. This human arms dealer thinks he can control Megatron. And he turns the Decepticons and some Autobots into like zombified weapons of war before they all get woken up. And, you know, Shockwave shows up and he's taken over Cybertron because, you know, obviously Megatron can't get this shit done. And they were building towards something really cool. And they unfortunately didn't get more than like a year into the ongoing after the first couple of miniseries before, you know, Dreamwave collapsed and, you know, things went to shit. But they had some stuff there. Like, they had some miniseries involving the Micromasters, which was set during the events of the early days of the Civil War. You kind of see the start of the Civil War and the dark, or was it the Darkness Within? Or
Is this where Megatron's a Spartacus character and he takes off his helmet and has robo hair?
I don't remember. I think that's an IDW thing. It's more like Megatron, this is more classic, you're an idiot, Starscream. Like Frank Welker Megatron from G1 versus, you know, what they did with him in IDW. And I mean, they were, it was all, you know, was it 2005? So they're coming up on like, you know, the 30th anniversary or 25th anniversary. Like they had a whole thing planned and then, you know, sadly, Dreamwave collapsed and everyone shadow over Pat Lee for like the next 15 years.
All right. Well, I can't think of any other continuities. I think this is a good point to wrap it all up.
Well, if I suggest one thing before we close it all out here, folks, I would recommend if you have any interest in any of these, I'll ask you guys to suggest the continuity. I'm going to say the Devil's Due G.I. Joe run. It's a lot of fun. You don't have to read all the sundry miniseries and that. I definitely recommend the Snake Eyes one and the two main ongoings. How about you, Ben?
Yeah, I think I already named the ones I liked. Like Post-Crisis DC is the one I liked. I mean, so much so that I was actually really happy when I had heard Dan Jurgens was writing Superman again a couple of years back. But that's
all I got. Specifically, like that's a big meatball to start chowing down on. Like any particular runs or storylines or anything that gives somebody an easy place to start.
I start with the Man of Steel trade and move forward on Superman, and I'd start with Batman Year One and move forward with Batman. I mean, it's like I'm a start from the beginning kind of guy with Post-Crisis. And you'll find your tolerance level to where you want to stop, and I just say stop wherever your tolerance level tells you. I'm not one of these people that will say what the end point is. I just say just start in 1986 and just move until you're done. Not until they're done, until you're done. You might read just two trades worth. You might read 10 years worth. It's up to you. It's up to your tastes.
All right. How about you, Red?
Ultimate Spider-Man, I guess.
That is defunct, yes.
The other would probably be Long Ben's thinking. Read the Wally West. I guess a saga of fucking classic DC.
Yeah,
usually before the return of Barry Allen, it fucking sucks. So start at the return of Barry Allen.
Huh. All right. So this is your host, Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Red Ink.
And we're saying goodnight.
So long.
Peace out.